Hi and welcome to Altscast Extra. Today I'm talking to Alicia Slimmer about her film Creed Moria, which is screening at the Oxford International Film Festival on May the 6th.
Hi Russell, great to talk to you.
And you. Could you first tell us a bit about Creed Moria for our listeners?
Sure. Creed Moria is a film that is, for the majority of the film is set in the 80s, and it has a very rockin' musical soundtrack that follows one teenage girl as she tries to navigate the crazy world she lives in that includes her domineering mother, a brother who's struggling with his sexual identity, another brother who's got a bit of a drug and alcohol problem, and a very jealous boyfriend. And then to top it off, she has a bit of an ass of a boss who is very, like, probably self-hating and takes it out on her. And so the whole story is about this young girl, how she just navigates day to day. And, you know, you kind of secretly hope that maybe she breaks free of these people and probably this place. So I won't tell you the spoiler alert, but, you know, I think you kind of hope she can find something better, you know, beyond the horizon of Queens, New York.
Amazing. Well, it looks super cool from the trailer and what I've read about it. It looks like a really great film. So you wrote and directed this film, and it's taken over 10 years from when you first wrote your screenplay to today, when it's sort of being shown at festivals. How does it feel to finally be showing your film to the world?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, shooting the movie itself was a dream come true. Probably wouldn't have taken me so long if I didn't also produce it myself. But it was just hard to come by money. And, you know, my husband was basically like, you could either wait around for someone to kind of make it for you and find the money, or figure out a way to make it for no money or the money you have. So that's what we did. We did like crowdfunding campaigns and got the film up and going. So to now be at the place where people can come to a festival and see it on the big screen and hear it with the amazing big speakers is just like, it's beyond, it's amazing, you know, because as you know, when you're a writer, you kind of, you know, it's a very solitary affair. And then filmmaking is the exact opposite. It's very extroverted. So, I really love, you know, the extroverted part and being out and meeting people and having them, you know, see this thing that just kind of existed with just me in my living room for like so long, you know.
Amazing. That's really cool. So you've said that Creed Moria is loosely based on your life growing up in Queens. Could you tell us a bit more about this? So kind of what you drew off of?
I could freely talk about it with you because you're in the UK and there's no chance my mom will be listening. I've kind of shied away from any kind of autobiographical mention of the movie, only because the mother in the movie is quite vicious. Like she's so awful, but not quite different from the mothers that I saw growing up, because during the time of like the 70s and 80s, the parents in my middle class neighborhood were very like big cocktail drinkers and didn't know where their kids were until it was time for dinner. So, you know, I kind of extrapolated these characters based on like people I knew in my own family and people I kind of grew up around. So, you know, I wrote the movie when I was pregnant with my first and only child, and there was something about like preparing for the future of bringing this kid into the world that really made me look back on like my childhood and where I came from. So I think that inspired the story.
My next question, I assume your mum hasn't seen it, but have any of your family or friends you grew up with seen the film yet? And will they?
You know, funny enough, my mom did come to see it. I mean, she's really proud of to just see that I'm fulfilling my dreams and doing, you know, living the life I want to live. But it was funny during the Q&A at a festival in Brooklyn, you know, I was really kind of quick to rush through the questions because I was so afraid of the autobiographical mention, you know. And so I just kept making jokes like, okay, let's wrap this up and go out and get a cocktail. And And I was like, that's a wrap. And then someone asked, can you talk about how this relates to your life growing up? And I was like, oh my God, here we go. So I talked about the psycho jealous boyfriend who tattooed my name on his arm, because that was based on a real guy I dated. And having a name like Alicia, I was like, good luck meeting another one. But ironically, I was the second Alicia, so I thought things came in thirds. He may luck out and find a third Alicia and be happy at a, you know, tattoo with my name on his arm. And then I spoke to the boss, who was, you know, a monster, because he was based on someone real. So I had enough to talk about that without pointing a finger necessarily at like my own mother or family. And then just when I thought I got away with it, my mom stood up and said that she wanted to add that there should be some, you know, like that little kind of thing that scrolls at the end of the credits that say like, this isn't based on anybody. And those people are, you know, that was just purely coincidental. So she made a joke that the mother in no way resembles the mother that I had. And everybody had a big laugh. But, you know, the mother in the movie is, you know, it's similar to my mom in the sense that, like, they're both incredible narcissists. And I think when you're a true narcissist, you can't see anything ugly about yourself, right? So I think she was somewhat protected from thinking any of it could have been based on her, because she never sees herself that way. So, and I have an amazing relationship with her now. So it's, you know, but she's so eager for me to be working on my next project and put this one to bed.
Cool. So obviously you directed and wrote this. Wonder if you could talk about your shooting style. And I also read that you have a preference for one take. So wonder if you could tell us a bit more about that.
Not so much a preference for one take as much as I was preferring to shoot wide and not do cutaways. So when you shoot like a wide take of, you know, we do it a lot in the movie, and I think it's kind of cool that people don't really notice it, because then I feel like it really works. But, you know, I think we're force-fed these movies where there's constant close-ups, right, of actors and their faces and stuff, which is great because they're gorgeous and beautiful and, you know, we love to look at them. But I feel like the movies I love to watch, especially a lot of movies that came out of like the 70s and stuff, you could choose where you're looking on the screen. Even like Wes Anderson, like one reason why I love him is like he fills up the whole palette with like his background, foreground, his main character, so many great colors, the production design. Like, it's just a feast for the eyes, and you could choose what you're going to look at in the action, and hopefully you're looking at what you're supposed to be looking at. But I love to give the audience more of a chance to, like, you know, have them decide what they really want to be looking at. And so it's the idea of, like, just shooting these wide takes. And when you shoot a wide take, you have to kind of get it in the one take. Otherwise, you're going to be spending your time editing or patching a scene together. So sometimes it doesn't work. You know, one of my favorite scenes in the film is when the three siblings are driving around at night in the car. And it's a pretty long take. And we never cut away on the three of them. And I think we did four takes. Till, you know, I felt like we got the right thing. But that's one scene, they're so great, the actors, but I had a chance, I think, to rehearse, I probably would have spent time on that scene alone, just working on beats, breaking down the beats, and really trying to get the humor across. The humor is there, but, you know, I think every director probably sees rooms for improvement, and that's one area I think I would have done it. And my editor said if you did cutaways, you probably could have just edited those beats in and got the laugh. But that's, you know, I wasn't really interested in that. I just kind of liked watching the three kids in the car and, you know, again, like figuring out like who am I looking at? You know, am I looking at the person talking, or am I looking at the person listening or not listening, you know? So that's kind of my style, I guess.
That's a very cool style, and yeah, Wes Anderson is a very good example of that. And like a Moonrise Kingdom, when there's the shot of the couple talking and someone on a trampoline on the other side of the screen, it's amazing. I guess that kind of leads into who inspires you as a filmmaker. So I guess as growing up, who did you watch that made you want to be a filmmaker? And I also, who today do you watch and they make you want to still be a filmmaker, and sort of who keeps inspiring you?
You know, I definitely love Wes Anderson, though. I feel like he keeps us a bit emotionally detached from the characters, and that's one area I think I would love to have his production design budget and the means to do a movie like he does. But I would add the added element of like just being a little bit more invested emotionally with his characters, because, I don't necessarily feel like moved the way I would maybe make watching something else. I don't have a lot of movies I could point to from when I was young, because I had like a 10-year period where I didn't see anything. Like a lot of people say Creed Moria is kind of like a John Hughes movie, you know, like a Pretty in Pink or 16 Candles. But I didn't actually watch those movies till a couple of years ago when I was in production, just to see what everybody was talking about. I was a weird kid that just spent my time in my room writing. So I really wasn't interested in television or movies the way I am now. But the one movie I did see when I was a kid was Superman. And I remember just feeling like that blew my mind, you know, like that would be so fun to make a superhero movie and be flying and between the score and, you know, the story. And then, you know, there was Star Wars. I did see those, and that had a big impact on me. Again, the like early special effects kind of blew me away. So, you know, but if I went to an island and I was only able to bring one movie with me, it would be A Fish Called Wanda. Just because between John Cleese and Kevin Kline, I just, you know, that movie always has me laughing, and I do like slapstick. So, that's my highbrow pick for the week.
No, that's a great film. That's, and it's a very English film, so good one to pick. So you've talked in the past about the difficulty for women filmmakers in the industry, and do you feel there are steps are being taken to improve the situation, and do you think that Hollywood to an extent is coming along to the point where it needs to be at, or do you still think that there's a mountain they need to climb to reach the place they should be in terms of representation of women filmmakers in the industry?
You know, I'm like dreadfully optimistic. I am so much like my main character in Creed Moria, who is just a total optimist, can probably put a smile on everything. I think it's kind of an exciting time to be a woman filmmaker, because there has been so much attention, you know, with the U.S. getting the ACLU involved, and then, you know, companies in Europe demanding that 50% of their TV directing roster goes to women and movie directing roster goes to women. You know, that's amazing. You know, it's so systemic, you know, like if you ask anybody to name the top three female movie directors, they'd really struggle to do it. And that includes women filmmakers that I know, you know, like we were sitting around trying to come up with our top like 10, top 15. And, you know, you got your Jane Campion, Jameer Nairs, you have like names that, you know, kind of around Catherine Bigelow, who won the Academy Award. But, once that kind of quiets down, a lot of people struggle. And it's a shame because, you know, I know I can make an amazing Fast Furious movie because I love hot rods. You know, having muscle cars in my movie was the most exciting thing. I actually was car wrangler, and I was also the stunt driver for my film because I grew up drag racing. So, you know, to say, oh, we have to have the next Fast and Furious done by a guy because, you know, it's a testosterone heavy movie. You know, you haven't met me yet, you know, I'm testosterone heavy. So I just feel like, you know, my long ass answer to your question is, I just think it's I think we're in a good point where we'll start seeing more female directors, and, you know, maybe we're not going to be there 100% yet where it's totally 50-50, but, you know, it's in motion. So I'm incredibly optimistic.
Cool. Good. No, that's good. I feel at some point we will reach a point when we're at an acceptable level, but movement is happening, which is good.
Yeah.
One thing I picked up on there is you said you were the stunt driver and that you were finding the cars. Did you like to be involved in lots of different elements of this film? Did you like that you were various different roles that, I guess, kind of, if you direct a Marvel superhero film, it's less easy to be the 15 different roles, but with a film like this, you can be. Did you like that?
Yeah, I think the upside of indie filmmaking is you have to have your hands in it all. You know, the only role I really didn't care for was I was making my own props because I couldn't afford a prop master, and I'd be coming home from the first day of like a very long shoot and have to start making deviled eggs because I don't know why we had so many deviled eggs in the beginning of the shoot for all these party scenes. And then a heart-shaped meatloaf I had to make. And then, you know, I learned quickly, you really should make more than one because my cast had to cut it up during the shot, serve it. The cast had to pretend to eat it or eat it. They were supposed to eat it. But by the sixth time, you know, my production designer grabbed that meatloaf to put it back together and to mold it like clay into a heart-shaped meatloaf. It was so disgusting and vile that we have a lot of blooper takes of these actors like kind of pretending they're going to eat it and just, you know, lingering with the fork near their mouth. So on my next shoot, I don't want to have anything to do with the props. I don't want to be making them, smelling them, eating them. You know, like, I really hope I can afford someone who can, like, you know, jump on board and get us what we need for, you know, hopefully my next one, I have a decent budget and I don't have to have all these concerns.
What is your next project then? What's next for you?
You know, my passion project, which, you know, will be another project that I'll probably never see a dime and cost me a fortune, is a limited TV series based in France during the Middle Ages, which I'm really excited about. And it's so far from Creedmoor. I mean, I'm going to have to write some character that brings some comic relief because that's who I am. But this is like the most serious thing I've ever written, you know. My other passion project for a movie, which I mentioned in Manchester when I was there last month for a film festival, I never really said it out loud until then, is I said if I had my way, I would make a movie about Page and Plant, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, and like the making of Led Zeppelin, kind of in a Oliver Stone Doors kind of way. And so I'm working on that now because actually a producer that was in the audience that night reached out. And so it'd be really exciting to kind of get that cooking. And I can't imagine that movie being made without the likes of Jimmy Page being on board. So I hope I'm coming back to your world and maybe going up to the Midlands and down and shooting that project. Cause I'd love to make it where it's not an indie film, but like, you know, a bigger budget, maybe a studio movie. So, you know, that's a total fantasy. And just for kicks for now, I'm working on a web series that is just a really funny, like, series about a 40-year-old woman in therapy with her parents. One of her parents is a therapist. And it's just fun. We're having a fun time casting it, and we're looking to shoot that in New York later on this summer.
Very cool. One thing to pick up there is you named three projects, and each of those projects is a different format and a different method of release. Do you feel that having the ability to make TV shows and web series and films has sort of opened up what filmmakers can do with their format?
Definitely. I mean, you know, things that are coming out of the BBC and, you know, any show you can watch on Netflix or stream on Amazon right now, like, I just feel like it's a golden age for television. You can really showcase your writing. There's something out there for everyone. There's just so much different content out there, you know? So in that regards, I think it's a natural evolution for like a writer director like myself to go that way. I would totally stick in movies if the distribution model was different, but you know, it's not a golden age for films. Like big studio movies are going straight to video on demand right now, and they're not even doing like a theatrical release. So I had always had high hopes that Creedmoor would play nationwide, and you know, someone would get behind my epic soundtrack and see the need to have this like kind of very true 1980s slice of life out there. But it's just a different beast right now. So I feel a little gun shy about jumping into another movie unless it's going to be, you know, produced by somebody else and maybe have a chance of being seen, or if it's going to go straight to video on demand, then have it at least be on a really good, you know, cable station or, you know, yeah. Like, so yeah, I think TV is just, so many people, me included, are watching their content on their laptops. So, you know, I'm obsessed with Game of Thrones. I just think it's like one of the greatest shows of all time. I just can't wait for like the next thing to come. And when the next season comes, I know I'm going to want to binge watch it. I won't want to watch it and have to wait, you know? So when you kind of binge watch something like that, it's like watching an epic movie that lasts for hours, you know?
Are you coming over for the Oxford Film Festival, or will you be in Brooklyn when it's on?
I would be there in a heartbeat if I could pony up the change to get there, but it's just tough, you know. I have my daughter and I have my husband, and he's traveling, and it's just so hard to leave her again, and then it's so costly to find someone to take care of her. So my long answer is probably not, you know, unless by some miracle someone's like, I have a ticket and, you know, fly in, fly out, because I would totally do that. You know, I hate not being at a festival where my film is screening, because, you know, what if the sound needs to be louder? Who's going to know to go bug the projectionist? You know, so, but I hope people do go out and see it. It's a really feel-good movie, and the feedback in Manchester was amazing. I won Best Director there, which I've never won before, so it was really just an incredible honor. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of the natives who said it was very similar to their story. So, you know, I think a lot of us have, like, mothers that hit the bottle and are kind of tough women to grow up with. So if you have a tough mother out there and you survived the 80s, go see Creedmoor.
Well, I mean,
that's my pitch.
I'm going to go see it because it looks great. It looks like a really fun, interesting film that I just feel I've got to see in the cinema. So yeah, I'm going to catch it when it comes here.
Go see it, Russell, and if the sound or the picture looks out of focus, you have my full permission to go bug the projectionist and tell him that, you know, Lee sent you, and Pat, you please have my back.
I will. Don't worry.
Let me know what you think.
I will. I'll let you know what I think. I think it's going to be good, though. Cool. Well, thank you for talking to us today.
It was an absolute pleasure, and I could, you know, obviously talk for hours, as you could tell. So have a great day over there in the UK.